England for like 10,000 virgin miles. So you're telling me I can book that for two people for 15,000 miles? Is that what you're saying? Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Daily Drop podcast. Today, we have a very special episode because we have a very special guest with us. And if you follow the Daily Drop YouTube, you've seen him every single week. We are with Brendan today. Thanks for being here, Brendan.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's funny, I've recorded like hundreds of videos in this room, but never in my life have I felt this nervous. So this whole talking off the cuff thing is new, so this should be fun and interesting.
Don't worry, we got you. It's been fairly new for Megan and I too for a little while, so you're not alone. But today we're going to talk about something that a lot of you ask us all the time, and that is mistakes we've made. Now, when you see us making YouTube videos, writing newsletters, talking about our experiences in the Daily Drop Lounge, you might think that we are perfect travel hackers and that we do everything the correct way and we've never made a mistake. But boy, could it not be further from the truth, because we all have plenty of mistakes we've made, whether it's just starting off or, like me, just a couple weeks ago, making a detrimental mistake. We're going to tell you about all of them today so that you can learn from them, hopefully, and not feel bad about mistakes that you've made yourself in the past. So we're just going to bounce around, give out some examples of like credit card examples, maybe specific just general travel ones, points and miles, etc. So Brendan, you want to kick us off?
Yeah. So this is actually a pretty recent one. Oddly enough, the specific example has to do with a video we're posting this weekend, but that is booking upgraded hotel rooms with points. Now, I don't think that that's always the case. Sometimes it is certainly worth it. But just maybe a month or so ago, my wife and I stayed at a Hyatt all-inclusive in Punta Cana. And I didn't really realize it when I booked it. And I don't even know why. But sometimes when you're booking with points, especially on Hyatt, they'll only have certain rooms available to book with points. And in this case, it was a club level room. So I think for a standard category B with Hyatt, normal rate is like 20,000 points a night. And for club level, it's 27,000 points a night, which doesn't sound like a huge difference. But even after you multiply that by four nights, that basically means that you could have stayed an entire extra night. So you figure 20,000 points times four nights would be 80,000 points. 27,000 points times four nights would be 108,000 points. So that's already a 28,000 point difference, which is more than enough to get another free night. So yeah, long story short, we booked the what's called the Exhale Club at this breathless Punta Cana resort. And I talk about it a little bit in the video that will go live on Saturday. But yeah, looking back on it, that was definitely not my wisest move, but also not the end of the world. And I'm sure sometimes it's worth getting the upgrade.
Yeah, for sure. Like accidentally booking yourself a nicer room is not the worst thing you can do.
No,
but I also see that a lot.
I definitely have worse ones that we'll get to.
Me too. I see that with Hyatt too. And I think something else to be aware of is that, like, quote unquote club level rooms, sometimes that doesn't even mean a different room. In some cases, that just means the room comes with club access. And so for people who have elite status, like for me, that would be a complete waste because I have globalist status, so I get club access anyways, no matter what. And so be careful about, even if you're intentionally booking upgraded rooms with points, be careful that you're not just arbitrarily booking something that you'd already get anyways if you book a lower level room.
Yeah, and it was interesting because my parents went with us and they aren't as into miles and points. So they just booked, you know, a standard room, and arguably their room was nicer. I think there was like one of the restaurants that we could get into in the middle of the day. And then we had access to, like you said, the Exhale Club, but that was on like the whole other side of the resort. So yeah, just seeing their experience compared to ours, it was pretty similar. So in this case, I don't know if it was worth it, but again, there are certainly worse mistakes that I'm sure we'll get to.
Yeah. And a lesson learned.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. Well, speaking of Hyatt, I'll share another Hyatt one that I just made on my last trip. I earned Hyatt Globalist status for this year, which means last year I racked up more than 60 nights. I think I racked up like 93 Hyatt nights last year. And when you get to the 60 night mark, not only do you get Globalist status, but you also get a category 1 through 7 free night award before the recent changes to Hyatt, that was the most valuable award you can get. It's still one, it's still pretty close to the most valuable free night award you can get. Because it lets you use a free night for pretty much any Hyatt property with a small exception, like a small handful of properties that are higher than that. It's very valuable. And I accidentally used that award for a category 3 Hyatt hotel because I had a category 1 through 4 award in my account as well. And when I booked this category 3 hotel, I assumed Hyatt would take the category 1 through 4, right? You'd think that should be the case. It wasn't until weeks after completing my stay and that I realized my category 1 through 7 was gone. I went to go use it for a category 7 and I was like, where'd it go? And I called Hyatt and they're like, oh, you used that like weeks ago. You completed the stay. And I was like, no. And that's just one of those things that like the tech with these hotel programs, this, I think the same thing happens with Marriott sometimes. If you're using free night awards, it's not always going to pick like the most ideal award for you. So you have to be very careful. And yeah, it was a pretty stupid mistake, especially considering I did not even notice it for weeks after the fact. It just goes to show you how careless I was being with tossing around these super valuable free night awards. I probably left hundreds and hundreds of dollars on the table because of it. And it's not something that can be fixed. And it's definitely not a mistake I'm going to make again with my free night awards, because now I'm just hyper vigilant about how I use them.
I feel like this episode's going to leave me in pain. Like,
oh yeah, it's.
I was going to say it made me feel better about my mistake, but I'm very sorry.
It should. It should. I'm glad I could help alleviate some of your pain through my own pain. But so one thing you can do. So yeah, sometimes free night awards are weird like that, where you don't know which one's going to deduct from your account. And one way to like make sure you're using the free night award would have been to, or if you're having trouble getting the correct free night award to pull from your account, which is something that is actually a common problem with Hyatt free night awards, something you can do is like book a placeholder stay. So what I could have done is booked like a category 1 through 7 for like a year from now using my category 1 through 7 free night. And then the only one available in my account is the 1 through 4. There's no way that could have been used for the category 1 through 7. So basically get rid of the chance for the wrong award to be pulled at all. And then you know that the one you're going to use is the correct one. And even just playing around with that, like booking like dummy stays with free night awards so that you can use the one you actually want and then just cancel the other stays. That's something I know people do. So there are lots of ways to not do what I did. So please don't.
Is that the technical term for that strategy? The dummy stay strategy?
It is now.
We should trademark that. Okay. Nice.
All right, Megan, let's see if you can make me feel better about my mistake with.
I don't think I will. I'm so sorry.
It's fine.
I mean, mine's just like a general rookie mistake. And like, it even hurts my heart to call it a mistake because it was just a lesson learned, which is probably fair to say for all of the. But I used over 150,000 points to fly economy class on Qatar because I booked through the Chase portal. Anyone that's listening on audio, Mike's face right now is like...
This one's so relatable.
Help you feel a little better, yeah?
Sure. Yes.
Was that just for you or you and your husband?
It was for two. Yeah. Okay. My husband and I.
So slightly better.
It's slightly better, but it's still so painful considering, you know, since we've flown both of us business class for, you know, 80,000.
Mm-hmm.
So painful economy class, poking me in the rib cage with an armrest the whole time. Because the plane I was on, the armrest didn't go all the way up. It only went halfway up. So
nice.
Not just cramped in the leg room, but cramped in either direction. And pretty much blew all of our first hard-earned Chase points on that flight, which, you know, went to the Maldives. We'll never regret that. Have earned the points back since then. And
it's the fact that it's Chase points that makes it hurt even more.
That's what I was thinking too. I was like, 150K for two people to the Maldives, like that's kind of okay. unless there are chase points.
Yeah.
It's fine. And had I transferred those points out, because I booked this in the chase portal before I knew about transfer partners, had I transferred those points out, I could have easily flown business class for that amount.
Was that just one way or a return?
Yeah, one way.
Okay, yeah. That's you probably could have flown the same airline in business class.
I know. That's what makes this the most painful.
You said that was on Qatar?
Yeah, on Qatar. Oh, and I've so you and it was
to the Maldives, you could have flown two suites for that much.
I know. It's dig the knife in more. I've done the search since then, and it was LA to the Maldives. And yeah, just to put myself
in more
pain.
Why would you do that
pain,
to yourself? That
I don't know. You know, just, I was like, how can I make myself feel even more sad about this?
Just crying as you scroll through the Qatar search page.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's sad, but I'm yeah, okay
that's
now.
That's I think a mistake that I've made a similar mistake, like using points for poor value by yeah. not transferring them to transfer yeah. partners yeah. in general. That's something I did early on as well. I think it's something we've probably all done and
sure.
a lot of people do and regret. So yeah, I think that if you can learn the value of transfer partners early on, that's great, but I think a lot of people, when they're starting off, make exactly that mistake and then realize that transfer partners are the way to go. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Learn from us.
Yeah, please. Okay. Brendan, what else do you got for us?
Yeah, mine, I guess I should have been careful because we were ragging on Megan pretty bad there, but mine is kind of similar. In general, I would call this one like analysis paralysis. So it's sort of the opposite side of it that yes, you want to get the best redemption value. And yes, transfer partners is probably the easiest way, especially if you're new to miles and points. But there's also an element of, I know I fall into this, where you spend so much time looking for the best redemption. You've got the calculator up, you've got 1,000 tabs open. I know we've all been there. And you just get so lost in trying to get the best redemption possible that you either end up doing nothing, hopefully that's not the case, or you end up compromising significantly on what do you actually want out of the travel just for the sake of getting the better redemption value. And I know that I do that a lot. And similar to what Megan had just said, I think my first ever experience with miles and points was almost identical. I booked, it was 141,000 American Express points. So it makes it slightly better for my wife and I to fly to Paris. And nice. Yeah, that was a one-way ticket. That was pretty painful. I still look at that. Mm-hmm. I literally pull up the redemption and I have like a screenshot of it. It's pretty bad.
Oh,
so,
no.
You know, I'm guess I'm just as bad as you, Megan, on that one.
Yeah, but, talk about yeah, digging I mean, the knife in.
But literally just, I don't know, a couple of months ago, we flew a similar route on KLM in business class and that was less points. And then soon we have a flight that we just booked coming home that was like 92,000 points. So significantly less in Virgin upper class, that particular flight is.
Yeah.
And yeah, again, it's just a function of not knowing about transfer partners because we just booked right through the American Express site. I will say, though, I do strongly believe that that first travel experience, especially internationally for somebody, is truly life changing. And I know that that was the experience that, you know, we got bit by the travel bug pretty bad. And the pain of that experience is really what pushed me into learning about miles and points and how can we, you know, stretch our miles even further. So lesson learned, but I think it certainly we've come out the other end. Okay, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think I've done something similar to what you guys just described. And I think we can probably all agree that when we got back from those trips that we booked with our points in a less ideal way, none of us were feeling like, oh my God, my life is horrible. I really messed up. I'm so sad. We're probably still just as happy having gotten to take an amazing trip for free because of points. So it's a like a mistake. I'm putting quotes up with my hands for people who aren't watching. But it's also not really a mistake because you're still getting a free trip with miles and points. There's just better ways to use points a lot of the time. So
well said.
Okay.
Mike, what do you got?
Okay, I'm going to take us out of the miles and points realm, and this is a travel mistake that I made also recently. This was like a year ago, pretty much exactly a year ago, almost to the day now. I was in Japan, having a grand time, had a really fun second half of my trip booked in in Korea, South Korea. And me just being an American and forgetting which countries require visas, I didn't even look online. I just assumed for no good reason that I would not need a visa for South Korea. Because I'm like, South Korea, that's a normal modern country with good relations to America. We get visa-free access to like every country in the world. That's going to be fine. And I didn't even so much as run a 30-second Google search. Showed up at the airport late in Tokyo. Check-in is like coming close to closing for my flight, but it was like business class, so I knew I could skip the line and like I didn't need much time at the airport. And I go to check-in and they're like, where's your it's not a visa actually, it's like an ETA type of thing, just like electronic travel authorization, but you need to like apply online through the South Korean government and get an approval letter from them. And they were like, where's your thing? And I was like, what thing? I'm an American, I can go wherever I want. And they were like, no, you can't, buddy. and they're like, you need this thing. And I was like, how long does it take to get? And they're like, we don't know. And I was like, what happens? So I just have to do it. And they're like, yep. And I bust out my phone and check-in from my flight is closing in like 25 minutes or something. And I'm like, there's no way I'm getting this visa. And I was so flustered. And like, I filled out the form online for South Korea and I just went to the, like there's an observation deck in Tokyo Haneda where you can like watch planes take off and go. And at that point I was like, I just ruined my whole trip. All this stuff that I booked is gone. Like there's no way I'm going to get approval in 20 minutes. And I was like, if I don't get approval, I'm just going to stay in the airport here and book a flight home to Toronto. I'm just going to cancel the next like 3 weeks of my travel. I was like so upset and flustered. Sure enough, 5 minutes before check-in closes, I get an email from South Korea. It's like, you're authorized to travel. You're good to go. I ran from the observation deck to the check-in, made it somehow, got my boarding pass, got on my flight, went to South Korea and continued my trip as normal. But it was such a dumb way to potentially like throw weeks of travel down the hole just because I didn't so much as look online about a visa. And I travel internationally a lot. Like at this point, I had been to more than 80 countries. I'm no stranger to obscure visa processes. And I just didn't even look because I just assumed. So that's, again, a pretty dumb mistake, but also just always double and triple check your visas because you can't check in for a flight. You certainly can't board a flight if you're not, if you don't have the right paperwork and arrival information and visas for the country you're going to. So that was scary and just kind of unnecessary. So I definitely am, again, much like the last mistake I made, I'm always like super hyper vigilant. Even when I think I know the visa policy for where I'm going, I'm checking like 3, 4, 5 times to make sure that I don't run into that again.
It's probably so refreshing for people to hear because you're someone who travels so much. And I feel like I hear about people making these mistakes and they're like, they beat themselves up for it. I feel like, you know, sometimes when we make the travel mistakes, we go into like the drama. We're like, oh, I can't believe I've done this. And also it often like works out in the end.
Yes.
I'd agree with that. Yep. Hearing Mike's mistakes is definitely making me feel better. So thank you, Mike.
You're welcome. And that's what I'm here for. Here to make you all feel better at my own expense.
No, I think that is a very relatable one, especially if you have traveled a lot in Europe. I know Europe is going to have a visa program soon for US travelers, although it keeps getting pushed back. But yeah, if you've traveled a lot just in Europe, you kind of get used to the fact that you can just go, and as long as you're out within 90 days, like you're good. But once you start to explore other places, you can become kind of overconfident and forget about those little things that, you know, you wouldn't otherwise think about.
For sure. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, Megan, take me out of this. I don't like to think about this.
Poor Mike.
I'll keep us in the general travel zone, though. Keep it relatable, maybe. And again, this was one of those mistakes that just was me/us, because it's actually on my husband's passport, not being vigilant with things. So as many of you all know that are listening, we got married abroad last year. And one thing we didn't look at as we were approaching the date was our passport expiration date. So when we did take a peek at that, we realized my husband's passport was going to expire right before our trip to leave for the wedding. It was like one day off. And we like called the airline and we're like, you know, can we come anyway? And they're like, maybe, depends who's working at the airport.
Could what let an you awful in. Answer.
Could let wow. you in, might not. Okay, probably not going to risk that for this trip. I've heard that passport expediting has gotten better since this occurred last year, or at least they're trying mm-hmm. to, but it was right in the midst of everything being a full-on mess of trying to get it expedited. We booked an appointment to get it expedited in the Miami office. We showed up in Miami. They said, oh, looks like they didn't actually schedule you. And we were like, what? We drove hours to get here. Can you get us in anyway? And they're like, nope, only if you're on the books. So had to call to make another appointment in which they didn't have one in Miami. So our options were to somehow magically get to Hawaii in 3 hours. I'm not kidding. The passport office was like, oh, can you make it to Hawaii in 3 hours from Florida? We were like, how?
Probably not.
How? So just a full-on mess. Ultimately, we finally had to fly to New Orleans to get it all taken care of. So an extra trip booked in there. And got it done, but it was definitely a mess. And I'm sure some people can relate to some passport drama.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that one. When we, my wife and I got married almost 2 years ago, and we had a trip booked for Iceland, and she had started the name change process. And we were like in the midst of that and had submitted her for her new passport, but hadn't gotten it. And yeah, it was a similar situation. Like, we were right up against it. I think we ended up getting a week before. But a tip, though, that we ended up doing, and I don't know if this is different state to state. I guess it depends. But we actually reached out to, like, our local representative. And a lot of them, if you go to their website, they will literally have, like, a form specifically for passport expediting. I guess that would be the word. So, yeah, we got hers expedited and got it in time. But, yeah. I think because it's what, like a 10-year renewal, you kind of forget about it, especially, you know, if you haven't done it or if you got your passport when you were really young. So yeah, I can definitely relate to that. And it seems like it's getting better, but it was pretty dicey there for a while.
Yeah. And that senator thing is, I think, pretty accessible in every state. Someone gave us that tip after we got it all figured out. Good. So
it works very well. I can tell
everyone
you,
listening. Well. It's a great tip. Yeah.
I think from the time we reached out and submitted the form, we literally got the passport in the mail like 2 days later. I mean, it was insanely fast. So
yeah, my problem is not expiring. I've never had a passport expire, but I have filled up multiple passports. And then before a trip, realize like right now, I'm leaving in one day to go to Indonesia and I don't have a single empty page in my passport. Right now, I have like a couple quarter pages that I'm hoping are going to work, but I might get stuck somewhere. But I had
a
problem.
It's a good problem to have.
it's like an adventure either way.
Yeah.
But a few years ago, I was going on a trip to Africa, like Kenya, Ethiopia, Tanzania, somewhere else. And in Africa, in like sub-Saharan Africa, the visas usually take up a full page. They're like a big sticker. And I had like one full page left in my passport and I was a few days away from leaving on my trip and I freaked out, but this was when I was still living in Canada as well. So like, I can't get a US passport in Canada either. So I called the passport office, made an appointment for the next morning at the Buffalo office, took the bus to Buffalo and they made me a passport in less than 1 hour, had a new passport in my hand, took the trip the next day. And this was like 4 years ago, I think. But there are ways to, if you're in that situation, to get one done very, very quickly, especially when it's not as chaotic as it was last year, like coming out of the pandemic when everybody was trying to renew their passports and travel. So between that, like the fact that you can show up in person and have one in your hand within a couple hours, you can do the expedited process, you can reach out to your local representation. These are all good ways to to get a quick passport if you find yourself with an expired one or a full one or a name change one. So hopefully that helps.
All of the above.
Yeah.
All of the above, yes.
Yeah. All right. Who's putting us in pain next? Are we back to Brendan?
I think we're back to Brendan.
All right. This one is a personal attack on myself, so I'll try to get through it.
Go easier on yourself.
I would call this one, I'm glad my wife is not within earshot, being a miles and points cheapskate, because I think she would definitely agree with that. I have to fight myself on this so often. Yeah, just because your flight is free and your hotel is free, mm-hmm. or either or, doesn't mean that you can't or shouldn't, you know, splurge occasionally on experiences. Like, getting there and being somewhere is only half of the travel. Mm-hmm. Once you're there, you actually want to like go and experience things. And I've said this before, but I feel like when you really get into miles and points, it makes you accustomed to just not having to pay for stuff. I know that sounds insane, but yeah, like we just booked an Alaskan cruise and there aren't really many great options or any options to book that with miles and points. And it wasn't cheap. And like, it was really, really painful to spend any amount of money on that. Or even like my wife and I are going to Disney in April. And even that, like, it was such an excruciating experience, even though it was like, I don't know, $1,000 or something. It was it's still like a lot of money, but when you're used to spending a couple dollars in taxes and fees, it's very hard. So what my wife and I do is, even though we are super into miles and points, we still try to budget each month like a set amount that we set aside into like a separate bucket for travel. So then even when we do book stuff with miles and points, we know that we still have like a, we call it a savings vault. So we have like a vacation savings vault that we know we can still go and experience things, eat food, enjoy ourselves. Because our first like big travel experience internationally, we were gone for 3 months. And right before we left, within literally 2 weeks, my wife graduated college, we bought our house, we got married, and then we left for 3 months. And needless to say, we definitely had those broke newlywed vibes. And I think we were living on like $75 a day was our budget. I still have the spreadsheet. It's so funny to look at. But yeah, we got there on miles and points and we stayed there on miles and points, but we were like eating baguettes every night from the grocery store in front of the Eiffel Tower. So, you know, we probably could have squeezed a little bit more out of that experience, but lesson learned on that one.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I have a similar thing that I do just in terms of like being a cheapskate with miles and points, but it's like I am so worried for some reason, which is just not really a possibility, that I'm going to like run out of miles and points one day. So I'm always like, oh, I could book like this nice hotel with miles and points, but instead I'm going to like book this really sketchy, crappy hotel in a bad location because I want to save them as much as possible. So I have this problem of like being cheap with my miles and points as a currency. Like, and sometimes it's nice to just splurge even with your points as well. So that's something that I'm currently working on. But I like what you said. I also have like a travel budget that I try to use. I set aside money every single month for travel, whether it's for things that miles and points can't buy, like the example you gave, or just sometimes it makes more sense to pay for things than use miles and points too. Sometimes it's better to save your points for more valuable things when you could spend money on them. Mm-hmm. So that's a good one.
Yeah. I think that my mistake number one helped me with that problem. After I saw that I accidentally blew like over 150,000 points from Chase, and then I was able to earn them back again and redeem them for awesome experiences, I was like, okay, I'm not going to run out of points. They're going to keep coming.
Yeah. Yep. You're totally right. And I'm better about it this year. This year is like, I'm just using as many points as I can. I've used like it's only March and I've used, I think, over 1 million points this year. I'm just I don't care about anything anymore.
Nice.
So, that is impressive. I'll give it to you. We were actually just talking about that when we were together this past weekend, how like we get a level of anxiety when your point balance hits like a certain amount. You're like, you got to spend them. Cause you hear those horror stories of, I feel like I should knock on wood, like people's accounts getting closed and stuff for no reason. Yeah. And especially when you're really into it, like it is a form of currency in a sense. So just, you know, the ability that can just vanish overnight is a terrifying thought. So
for sure.
You know, some people have to hoard their miles and points, but use them. Go enjoy the hard work you put in to earn those points.
Yeah, you're totally right. And it's not just points disappearing or accounts getting closed, even just devaluations of programs. Mm-hmm. Like if you Hyatt. Have, yeah, exactly, Hyatt or airline programs, if they change their award charts, or like if you have, like, I don't, every day there are airlines devaluing their program. Turkish just did a major devaluation the other day. And so even if you don't have points with those airlines, but they're in the bank and that's like an option for a transfer partner, then like your bank points are worth a little bit less because the transfer partners available are now worth less. And so that's why earning and burning points is definitely the optimal way to go. It's nice to have a little, you know, pad your balance a little bit just for if you have any last minute things or emergencies come up where you can use them. But in general, you should be trying to earn points for a trip, spend them, and then find another way to earn them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Completely agree.
I got one last one for me. This one was happens all the time, but it also just happened in a major way yesterday. After we even decided to make this episode. This happened when Megan sent me the question, "Hey Mike, we're recording a podcast about mistakes we've made. Do you have any good ones?" And I was
"No."
Yes, in fact, 5 minutes ago. So this is a mistake, like I said, I've made a bunch of times, and it's waiting too long to pull the trigger on an award. Stewing over the award, like booking out a trip or looking at a specific flight or hotel redemption or something, especially for a trip you know you're going to take, which is sounds silly, but like sometimes we, like Brendan said earlier, like you're thinking about the ideal way to optimize your points. You're trying to find like the perfect redemption. Whether it's that or whether it's just like, oh, am I ready to do this? Maybe my plans will change a little bit or something. Waiting to pull the trigger is not a good idea with miles and points, because award availability, whether it's for flights or hotels, is limited and it can disappear in an instant. And even if you see like five seats available or something, if some family comes in and swoops those up, you're done. I had a really complex trip that I spent a ton of time mapping out using Aeroplan points. It was many flights because I had like, I have multiple weddings I have to go to. I'm like going to Syria in a couple months and a few other places on this like one massive round the world trip, very complicated to book and make happen at all. But I mapped it out and found a way to make it work, found some great award availability. Everything fit in nicely, but I was like, is this good enough though? Is this good enough? I'm going to sleep on it. And I slept on it for like 5 days. And I looked in the morning yesterday and everything was still available. What's that? Yes, I slept on it
for 5 days.
Yes, exactly. A very long sleep. I was exhausted. But anyway, so I looked yesterday and there were still seats available on all of the things I wanted. I called, this was with Aeroplan, of course. And I called to make the booking. And like while I called, just maybe a matter of hours after I had seen availability for everything, multiple seats that I had seen earlier that morning were now gone, when like if I had just done it 5 days earlier there were a million seats, or if I had done it any time in the 5 days between those two moments. And I had to go back to square one and replan the whole thing. Actually, it's still not even done because I haven't found another way to make it work now, even though I have like really concrete things that I need to do and places I need to be at on specific dates. I found a way to make it work and I didn't pull the trigger. The nice thing about points and miles is that many programs, especially North American programs like United, Delta, American, let you change and cancel awards for free. There's no reason, whether it's like in the US or using it for partner airlines abroad, there's no reason not to pull the trigger if you find something that you like and make the decision later. And you can always cancel or change later. So I think just a good way to do it is to, especially for a complicated trip like mine or for something really important like mine, definitely pull the trigger because award availability is volatile. And then if you're using most of the popular programs, it doesn't even need to be important. Even if you're like, this might be kind of cool, I'll book this and decide in like 2 months if I actually want to go, that's fine because you can just cancel, get your miles back, get your taxes and fees back, and it's not a big deal. So, yeah.
Another relatable one though, because I feel like I've heard so many people tell me stories about, oh, I just waited a day and it was gone.
It can change minute to minute. This has happened to me too with like really important redemptions like Q suites and things like that. And Qatar charges like a $25 fee to cancel an award ticket. And I gotta say, like some of the times that I did that and I was like, I don't know if I can actually make this. Like, I found Q-suite availability. Mm-hmm. There's like one seat left. And I'm like, can I actually make that? I would have much rather just booked that. And if I couldn't make it, just pay the $25 because the payoff of Q-suites, like something really rare, something difficult to find, something that costs mm-hmm. a ton of money, something that's like an amazing bucket list experience, that's worth $25 if I need to cancel it down the road. So like, even sometimes when there are fees, it can still be worth just pulling the trigger when you see the moment, when you see the opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely.
These Especially examples are making me class. Look pretty stupid, but
I know yours are so much more painful than the ones we gave.
I picked all the worst ones.
Yeah, especially with any kind of like upper class or business class flight, like sometimes there might only be one or two award seats that are set aside for that. So
yeah,
if you find it, like pull the trigger, you can always make that decision later.
Yeah,
for sure.
Okay, I have one more. Well, all right,
let's finish this off, Megan.
Yeah, I probably have 20 more, but one more for the episode.
We'll save it for part two.
Yeah. Well,
clearly there's enough supply of mistakes for a part two.
If you want to hear more of our mistakes, let us know.
This is a therapy session for all of us.
Yeah, it's nice.
Well, I figure, Mike, since you talked about your favorite program, your whole plan, I'll talk about my mistake I've made with my favorite program, which is Virgin Atlantic. Yeah. Well done. Great guess. Yes. So my favorite program is Virgin Atlantic. I've booked many tickets on there for myself and my husband. But what I didn't know is that there are Virgin Atlantic Companion Award seats, which give you the availability, according to Brendan Space. He might not have known that either.
Nope.
We'll link up the resource. Mike
Taking
doesn't.
Notes.
Okay. All right.
The podcast.
We are unveiling something here. We'll link the resource in the show notes so you can learn about it too. Yeah, there's Virgin Atlantic Companion Award seats where you can basically book your second seat for 50% of the points, depending on the season you're flying in and all of that. So here I was booking multiple tickets a number of times for full points price. Again,
how can you book these award tickets? Like, what are the stipulations for using these?
It's pretty simple. You just have to call to book. There's an award pricing chart on the website, which is what we'll link up in the show notes. So there's an award pricing chart, so you'll know how many points you need to transfer over. You just call Virgin Atlantic, tell them you want to book a companion award seat. Virgin Atlantic has some of the most wonderful reps in the biz, so they are very knowledgeable on how to do this. They get you booked. That's it.
So
that's pretty simple.
I'm gonna
okay, so you can fly from the U.S. to England for like 10,000 Virgin miles. So you're telling me mm-hmm. I can book that for two people for 15,000 miles? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, there's a few like seasonal stipulations. Seasonal stipulations, regions, they're priced by region. But yeah, that is what I'm telling you. It is painful the amount of points that I've used.
That's okay. Insane. I'm just thinking of all the Virgin flights I have booked right now that I should have used that on.
Yeah, I was thinking that through.
Cancel them. And
there we go. Yeah. I'm going to combine your two suggestions and
learn from both of our last two mistakes and benefit for yourself.
I love it.
Yeah. It's a hidden gem of a tip, I feel like. You know,
yeah, that's great. I feel like I should write about that in the newsletter. I'm actually going to do that.
We're just actively creating content right here on the podcast.
There we go. We have a Virgin Economy Award booking right now, and we have, like I said, the upper class one coming home. And I already thought they were really good redemptions, but that would be...
I'm so sorry, Brendan. I feel like I should have told you all.
No, that's great to know, because like Brendan said, they already have such great award redemption rates to begin with. Mm-hmm, so the fact that this is a thing is surprising and wonderful.
And Virgin does typically have higher fees, but even with that, I think our upper class flight home was like 16 or 17 cents per point, which is absolutely insane.
Yeah. Yep. Some good opportunities for sure.
See,
does that
you
work?
Through...
Do you know if that works with partner awards? Like, if can you do that with like Delta One booking with Virgin miles?
I
we can talk about this after. We don't have
yeah,
to
yeah.
Waste
I'm
podcast.
I am Mike's like, I'm here to learn. I'm taking notes. I am like pretty high percent sure that it's only virgin metal. Yeah.
That's not surprising. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
It feels like it would be too good to be true if it worked with partners, still.
Right.
Our Southwest companion pass also just expired, so maybe this will help soften the blow of that a little bit.
Yeah, that's really sad. I'm sorry to hear that.
It is. Yeah. We're still grieving. It's okay. We'll be all right.
Okay, condolences. I'll send a card in the mail.
Okay, I'll send you one for your Category 7 for the award.
Oh, you had to bring it up again.
And we've come full circle.
All right. Yeah. Well, speaking of coming full circle, I think that's going to do it for this episode of the Daily Drop podcast. So if you enjoyed this, please tell us because we want to know. So you can do that by leaving a review wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're on the YouTube, you can give us a thumbs up. You can leave a comment as long as it's a nice and or constructive comment. Yes. And you can send us an email at podcast@dailydrop.com if you have questions, comments, concerns, and we'd love to hear from you. So thanks for tuning in, and thank you, Brendan, for being here today. This was fun. And
yeah, we'll this was fun. Thanks for having me.
Of course, anytime you want to come back, we're here for you. But thanks for listening. We'll see you all in the next episode.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.